Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carl Matchett. How are you, sir?
Still rather annoyed from last night, if I'm being honest, but on we go.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Absolutely still livid with the shit show that was put forward last night at Goodison as Liverpool bent over and allowed Dominic Calvert-Lewin to pummel them into oblivion. A 2-0 win for the Ev. Liverpool, not even a whimper. Not even a whimper. They might have had some chances. They deserved absolutely nothing from the game. However, we are taking on West Ham this weekend, and West Ham are not in particularly good form. They lost to Fulham 2-0 at home. Then the following weekend, which was just last weekend, they went to Selhurst Park and took on the conquerors of Liverpool, Crystal Palace, and got absolutely battered 5-2. Yeah. They have won one of the last seven Premier League games, three defeats and three draws in there. They have won three games this calendar year in the Premier League. They beat Brentford, they beat Everton, and they beat Wolves. They have lost six, and they have drawn six. So in the last 15, three wins. They're not a good team in good form. There is some very good players there, but they have fallen apart, I assume, because of their focus on Europe. They did also get dumped out of the FA Cup in the third round by Bristol City this calendar year. And in the Europa League this year, they lost to Freiburg, then hammered them in the replay, in their return leg, lost away to Leverkusen, and then drew at home to Leverkusen. So four wins from 21 games in all competitions since the turn of the year, Carl.
Yeah, not good form at all. We've been backwards and forwards talking about West Ham a few times, and I think overall, across the entirety of the season, it probably still stands that they've been near enough as good as they could hope for in a general season. Like, obviously, given the trophy success of last season, they will naturally hope for progression and hope for more. But if you've got a decent cup run into, you know, the latter stages in Europe, if you've got yourself among the better teams in the league and you're placed up there, then I think as an entire season, that's more or less the sort of glass ceiling for West Ham, unless they are exceptional, unless they have an exceptional campaign, unless they get really fortunate with injuries, unless they pick, you know, two signings out, which are absolutely incredible, that kind of thing. Like eighth and a run to the quarterfinals in European competition is a really, really good West Ham season. So across the board, while we can obviously point out that there are things to improve, that there are obviously individual players who have not shown great form or they might need to upgrade or so on and so forth. I know that the fans have a big complaint over the playing style, and that's fine and fair enough. But across the board, I still think that this is really, in the context of West Ham's, let's say, the last two decades, three decades, pretty damn good.
I fully agree. Like, a top half finish for West Ham is not something that their fans can turn their nose up at, because, like, let's be really honest. Like, it's not something they've done on a consistent basis. They had back-to-back top half finishes under Moyes in 2021 and 21-22. That was the first top half finishes they'd had since 15-16, which was the only top half finish they'd had since 08-09. They've been relegated in the interim. And again, you can look back further. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including the Moyes on 6, 7, eight top half finishes in the entirety of the Premier League. Sorry, nine top half finishes in the entirety of the Premier League history for West Ham. And five of them came in the first 10 years. So it just hasn't been a thing where West Ham United have been a regular top half team. They've been a bottom half, often battling relegation team. And Moyes has, to his credit, done very well there to finish top seven twice, to win the Europa Conference League. And as you said now, quarterfinal of the Europa League. I know they were in a, and they, like, remember, they were in a semi-final a few years ago as well. So it's three decent European runs and three top half finishes in a four-year run. That's the best West Ham run in Premier League history. Their Premier League history, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, form and the season are two very, very different things. And holy crap, do we know that as well as anybody else, let's be honest. Form right now for West Ham is pretty bad, like you've said. And during the course of a year, I mean, the fans, when you get to the end of a campaign, you tend to have your feelings of the season coloured by what's happened in the last 2 months, let's say, whatever it is. It can be different for different teams. But generally speaking, if you sort of get to this point and you're in bad form, it feels like there was a lot more that could be done, that you need some sort of change over the summer, whatever it is. So you can understand a little bit the fact that, you know, West Ham go into the summer feeling dissatisfied in some regards. But I think if you take a step back and the fact that they've actually won more games than they've lost this season in the league, not a lot of teams do that, to be honest. Not a lot of middle of the road teams do that, for sure. And, you know, if you're still ahead of Chelsea after all the money that they've spent coming into the end of the campaign, and they've got games in hand over West Ham specifically, but if you are there, thereabouts, managed to do so, again, I just don't really see the complaints. Not dissatisfaction or not feeling that you can improve, but complaints.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at West Ham in the last number of years, like, they lost 11 games in 2021. They finished sixth. In 21-22, they lost 14 and finished seventh. Last season, they lost 20 Premier League games, over half. This season, they've lost 12. They've got four games left. Maybe they lose a couple. But that's not a bad season at all. And you are right when you say that people come the end of the season do tend to judge far more on the second half of the season rather than the first half or even the whole season. Like, think of last season, for an example, with Jack Grealish and John Stones. They had brilliant runs from February till the end of the season. And we were told, well, they had great seasons. But they didn't, because the season begins in August. And West Ham's season began in August. And they have spent most of this season in the top half. They were 13th after match day one. They were 12th after match day 11. But other than that, every single match weekend has ended with West Ham United in the top half. And that's great consistency for them. They got as high as second after three games, but sixth really was their highest spot once real games had been played. They were sixth for a period from match day 18 to match day 22. That's really good. And it's funny because some of their players have been guilty of contributing to the raising of expectations. Like Mikel Antonio, you'll remember early in the season, went on some podcast and said that they were going to finish above Liverpool this year and they were going to beat Liverpool at Anfield. And then he got mercilessly rinsed when Liverpool battered them and he was absolutely garbage. But for them to finish above Liverpool this year, where was he realistically setting the expectation? Because for me, the floor for Liverpool this year was going to be, like, the basement for Liverpool was going to be top four. But the floor was really third. Like, who else out of Arsenal and City was really going to finish above us this year, barring some sort of catastrophe for us? So where was he setting the expectation for West Ham? They finished in the top six twice in Premier League history. Twice. They've been relegated twice. Like, it's not like they've been some juggernaut team competing at the top level all the time. There's an unrealistic expectation around West Ham, in my view. Like, you often refer to, like, the big seven now, which we include Newcastle in. If you were looking to expand that to a big eight, you'd be looking at the likes of Villa and Everton, if they ever got their act together, before you'd look at West Ham. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're one of the 10 biggest clubs in England.
No.
But yet they seem to have this expectation that they should be.
Yeah, there has often been this thing about West Ham, even, like, I remember, like, back in the sort of, I don't remember exactly which year it was, maybe 2003, was it, when they got relegated? 2004, something like that, anyway, where the whole refrain, the whole season long, was too big to go down. Like, and we've had that quite a few times about multiple clubs, but West Ham more times than most, shall we say. It's never been true about them. And they've obviously proven that more than once. I think they're a good side. I think there's a big enough club there that they could always be involved in the top flight, but you don't have a right to it. You certainly don't have a right to be in the top six. And absolutely, if it was going to be a top eight, a big eight, it would be Aston Villa right now, based on literally where they are on the table, based on the spending power that they have at the club and the owners, based on their history. And that is miles, miles bigger than West Ham's, of course. There's absolutely no reason to include West Ham above them, like in E category, basically.
Yeah, I've never bought the West Ham too big to go down nonsense. Historically, they've been relegated five times. So they've never been too big to go down. They were, and even if we just look at recent history, they were relegated in 1989, in 1992, in 2003 and 2011. That's four relegations in the last 35 years. You're not too big to go down. Like Villa, I would have said, were too big to go down before they went down, because...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Even though they were relegated in the 80s, I would always look at Villa and look at their history and what they've done. Like, West Ham have never won the top flight title. Villa have won it 7 times. They've won the FA Cup, I think, 7 times. They've won a European Cup. That is what I would call a club that should have been too big to go down. West Ham are not that at all. Like, I put West Ham, whose honours list is basically 3 FA Cups and a Cup Winners' Cup, I'd be putting them more in the basket with your, like, Nottingham Forest. And Forest have better history with 2 league titles and with a league title and 2 European Cups and a bunch of league cups. But I would still put West Ham in that basket.
Yeah, I'd probably even say Forest bigger than that, to be honest, even in the Villa basket, to be honest, as former European champions. I think it's not West Ham, it's Villa and Forest for me who prove that you cannot be too big to go down. Mm. Like, and Villa going down and Forest going down shows that anybody, and certainly clubs the size and history of West Ham, do.
Hello there. Have you ever found yourself getting ready to watch the Liverpool match? You've got your mates round, you've got your drinks, you've got your snacks, you're all set to go. It's going to be a good day. And then you find out, oh, the game's not actually being broadcast in your region. There's the heartbreak, there's rage, there's despair, there's fury, you're upset, you're looking for a solution. Well, we've teamed up with NordVPN to bring you a game-changing solution. That's right. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country where the game's on live. It's like having a global ticket to sports, TV shows, and movies from all around the world. And here's the best part. If you go to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index, you'll score the best discount on your NordVPN plan. Plus, our link gives you 4 extra months free on the 2-year plan. And that's what we call a winning streak. And if you're sitting there and you're thinking, what if it's not for me? What if I don't like it? What if I'm not getting the use of it? Don't worry about it. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so it's totally risk-free. I've been using NordVPN to catch all the Liverpool matches and TV shows that I'd normally miss out on. It's totally transformed both my weekends and my TV watching. And not only that, not only does it give me access to stuff from all around the world with the click of a button, it keeps all my data safe. It means that the miscreants, the ne'er-do-wells, what my grandmother would have called scallywags, who lurk on the internet to try and steal your information, can't get your information. NordVPN keeps it safe for you. So don't let geo-restrictions bench you this season. Visit nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and make sure that you're in the game, no matter when or where it's being played. Remember, it's not just sports. It's your all-access pass to binge-worthy TV shows and blockbuster movies from all around the globe. NordVPN literally unlocks the world for you and keeps you safe from the world. So don't miss out. Head over to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and let the fun and games begin. Yeah, I mean, look at Leeds. That's another massive club, much bigger than West Ham, with great history, great success, huge fan base, good spending power, up until Peter Ridsdale lost the run of himself and spent tens of thousands on fish. they look, I mean, too big to go down. But again, they'd been relegated in the 80s. There's only really, if we're being honest, Carl, there are 3 clubs in England who you would look at and say, from a historic point of view, are too big to go down. Liverpool, Arsenal, and
Man United.
And then you would say, Chelsea and City have bought their way into being too big to go down.
Yeah.
But like, if the shit really hit the fan at Spurs, I wouldn't be surprised if Spurs went down at some point in my lifetime.
Well, I mean, if they were not a million miles away, only, again, a few years back, to be perfectly honest. Well, I say a few years, probably like 10 to 15 years now that I'm thinking about. But, you know, at the sort of the time of the Stefan Freund, Stefan Iversen kind of era came to an end, and they were really struggling to move into the next period. They were sort of 15th, 16th, 14th sort of for a couple of years in a row there. So I think, like West Ham, I wouldn't put above Newcastle in terms of history, trophies, size of club, that kind of thing. That's quite a bit below the Villas and so on. So this is a really good overall season again, like we said, for West Ham. Yeah, they're in bad form at the minute, and they're having a really poor end to season, which may well suggest that there's time, but that doesn't mean that this has been a bad year.
No, not at all. Not at all. And like, if you're a West Ham fan and you're looking at that squad, there's a lot of reasons to be very, very happy about it. Like, Alphonse Areola is a good goalkeeper. You've got some good defenders in Mavropoulos, in Zuma, in Agard. I quite like young, he's not young, he's 24 now, but I quite like Ben Johnson. I think Soufal has been very good for them. I think it's probably time to move on, but you know, it's not a bad defensive group. It's just that they're all, unfortunately, in bad form. Zuma's playing poorly, Mavropoulos is playing poorly, and Agard, to be fair, has had a bad season. But that's partly Moyes' fault for chopping and changing so much. There's talent in midfield. You've got Lucas Paqueta. Most clubs in Europe would take him. Mohamed Kudus, again, most clubs in Europe would take him. Edson Alvarez is a good player. Ward-Prowse has had a decent season. I think he's quite a limited footballer, but you know, he does offer something because he's an elite set piece taker. Suchek is a decent player. And while Calvin Phillips has been a disaster since going there, he is a good player. Max Cornet is another decent player. And then the attack is where I think you're a little bit left down. Jarrod Bowen is very good. Antonio's well past his best and well past the point of being useful. And Danny Ings, unfortunately, it hasn't worked since he left Southampton, either at Villa or there. But there's still a lot to like about that squad. Like, it's not a million miles away from potentially having a crack at the top six on a season-to-season basis. The issue for them is Paqueta's not going to stay long-term. I don't imagine Kudus will stay long-term. And they're the two most talented players at the club. Jarrod Bowen would be the third in the three best players look, but he's the one that might stay because he seems very settled. And I think he likes being a big fish in a smaller pond, as opposed to if he went to a top club, he might not get as much chance, as much of the ball, wouldn't be as heavily involved in the goal scoring aspect. He might be asked to play a different role. But like, you've still got these three players. When was the last time West Ham had three players performing as consistently well as Bowen, Paqueta and Kudus? All of them sort of prime or slightly before prime. And, you know, throw in Alvarez, throw in Agard, throw in Zuma, throw in Mavropoulos and Areola. They're all in their primes or just before the primes. When was the last time West Ham had this level of talent up and down? Not in my memory.
No, I mean, probably a time when they might have had three would have been the Cole, Johnson, Lampard kind of era. But as a team, that got relegated as well. So they definitely didn't have the support cast. Talent-wise, maybe they were there, but definitely not the support and players around them. I would definitely be rather having the Agard and Areola kind of next in line in quality rather than what was probably at the time someone like Steve Potts.
Steve Potts, Neil Ruddock. Remember they signed all the old players? Neil Ruddock was there and Stuart Pearce was there and Ian Wright was there, and it was just like a proper old-timers thing. You had Di Canio and Trevor Sinclair doing madness on a weekly basis, but then there was just a collection of outfielders around them. Like, you're right. Like, they have produced historically some fantastic players, you know, that came through there. Like Michael Carrick, an absolutely outstanding player. Rio, hugely overrated, but a very good player. Lampard, a very good player. Joe Cole, probably didn't live up to the hype, but a very talented player. Jermaine Defoe, another one. Like, they've produced a lot of good players over the years, but those were always players that were going to leave West Ham. None of them ever had any idea of staying at West Ham for a long time. They were all going to leave and go on to bigger and better things. And yes, Kudus and and Paqueta will probably go on to bigger and better things. But West Ham went and bought those players. Those players chose, as established professionals, to join West Ham, which does go to show that the reputation of the club has grown over the last few years under David Moyes. But they find themselves in an awkward position where Moyes is at a contract in the summer, and all of a sudden there's a lot of noise around them looking at other managers when Moyes claims he's had a contract offer and he'll decide in the summer. So here's a question for you. How are they approaching those meetings with other managers? Are they going into a meeting with Lopetegui or Amorim and saying, look, there might be an opening in the summer, would you be interested? Or are they saying, if you are interested, we will withdraw this contract offer and we'll send David Moyes on his way? Because neither of them sound very good. One from the possibility of getting that manager, and the other from the possibility of alienating the current manager and maybe some of the players who are loyal to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a ridiculously tricky balance, to be honest. Like, we've kind of seen players-wise where, let's say, De Gea, for example, last year, where he had a contract and then it was revoked, and then there was lots of discussions over him coming back, and it creates so much uncertainty. And that's just for one position, let alone the person who has to manage all of the people in the squad. And even for prospective signings, like, if you're a young up-and-coming player, you've got a chance to go to West Ham, it might not matter too much for you. If it's Moyes or another incoming manager, you might still agree to that. But if you're a more established player, it's like, you know, when they went and got Kudus, for example, is that going to happen, that kind of level of signing? Is anyone going to be agreeing a new deal if they are Bowen levels of ability in the squad, if they don't even know who the manager's going to be at the minute? I would suggest less likely.
Yeah, I fully agree. It just, it creates unnecessary upheaval. Like, they'd nearly be better off if they just sat down with Moyes and said, look, it's been fantastic, and thank you so much for the European trophy that you won us, which a lot of people have mocked, but in 25 years, that trophy will have a lot more credence than it does now and will mean quite a bit. Thank you for the three top half finishes, which, again, it's a large percentage of our top half finishes over the Premier League era, but we're going to go in a different direction. And the thing for Moyes is he would leave in a much stronger position than he was when he went in. Because if you remember, he got the job. They decided they didn't want to keep him. They binned him off. Pellegrini came in. They binned him off. And Moyes, nobody would touch him while he was out of work. So he came back in because he had no other option. Because United had been a disaster, Sunderland had been a disaster, and Real Sociedad had been a disaster for him. But now... Kilimendi. One of the best press conferences of all time. It's right up there with Joey Barton's French accent, to be fair. Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye. I do think Moyes would leave West Ham with his reputation rehabilitated. You know, three top half finishes and a European trophy and two other good European runs in his pocket. I think he would be quite appealing to, let's just say, for argument's sake, if Gary O'Neill got poached away from Wolves, or if Marco Silva got poached away from Fulham, or if Thomas Frank got poached away from Brentford. I think Moyes would be an attractive option for all of those three. Maybe Everton, if Dyche moves on, would want him back and maybe he'd want to go back. Mm. But like, he couldn't get a job when he was out of work the last time. Now I think he will be somebody that other clubs would look at if an opening opens up for him.
Yeah, definite candidate again now. No question. Even if he opted to try overseas again, I think he'd have that gravitas of winning a European trophy.
Don't go to Spain, David. Don't go to Spain. Germany,
if he wanted to.
Germany might be the place.
Hey, if you wanted to go to Germany, or if you wanted to go north of the border, if you want to go back to Scotland, if you want to go to Netherlands, for example, why not?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's the thing. He's putting himself in a really good position. So I think if they were to sit down with him and say, look, we want to move on, we want to go in a slightly different direction, I don't think you're doing him dirty. Whereas I think if you run it out till the summer and he turns around and says, okay, well, I want to sign this extension, and you go, oh, no, we don't want to do that, I think that's going to look really, really bad and have a really negative effect on how you're perceived. Because agents and players and that, they talk to each other, and they all will judge clubs and how they treat people. And like you said, like, if the senior players that they're eyeing up and they're looking at a situation where, geez, you stabbed your manager in the back and booted him, how do you treat your players? That can't be good. Of that West Ham team, Carl, who would you take at Liverpool?
Same player as I wanted last summer.
Mohamed Kudus?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I do wonder if there's a buyout clause there, because he was on his way to Brighton and that deal fell apart because he was insisting on a buy, or him or his agent were insisting on a buyout clause, and Brighton wouldn't do it. And then all of a sudden it got done very quickly to West Ham. And I do wonder if West Ham were willing to give him a buyout clause. Now, West Ham might just have given him a lot more in terms of wages than Brighton were willing to. But I do wonder if there might be a buyout clause there that maybe we could exploit should the likelihood of, you know, the likelihood happen and Mo Salah leave this summer. I'm of the belief that if Salah leaves, and it is Arne Slot, we need two wingers, right and left.
Yeah.
And I'd really like Kudus on the left of that, to be honest. I more so than on the right, because the one I want on the right is Michael Olise. I know people will say he's injury prone. Just go and look at pre this season and see where he stood. 37 games last year, hadn't been injured in 4 years, got injured at an under-21 tournament this summer that he probably shouldn't have been playing at, and then got re-injured because Hodgie overplayed him. Olise and Kudus on the wings would be absolutely incredible. But Kudus, I mean, is a special player.
He is. He's a magnificent player. And the bigger thing about him is, especially in a system which is variable, let's say, from the 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1 or whatever, he can play 1-2-3-4 minimum positions, 5 positions minimum, let's say, in a 4-2-3-1 to 4-3-3. But he can play as an 8. He's played in midfield many a time. He's played against us in midfield in Champions League, for goodness sake.
Yeah, and got injured in that game.
Yeah, he can play all the way across the number 10 line, let's say, right, middle and the centre, and we've seen him play up front as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen him play as a false nine and be really, really good at it. I also think if Ruben Amorim was to come in, I also think he could be dynamite as a left wing back. And I know people will say, well, he's not good enough defensively. The way Amorim uses his wing backs, they're basically wingers. And like, Nuno Mendes is not a great defender, and Amorim had him flying. Nuno Santos plays there regularly. Now, he is an out-and-out winger, and he plays there. Because of the back three, you get away with that. So he would absolutely, regardless of who the manager is, he would absolutely be on my list for this summer, because he offers both immense quality. He's only 23, turns 24 in August. And like you said, that versatility. And it's not just like, it's not like Milner versatility, where he'll stand there and do a job. He can excel in multiple positions, in 4 to 5 positions across different formations. He's the type of player that allows you to change formation in game without changing the players. And those type of players are really, really valuable. So he'd absolutely be one. I really like Paqueta. I would take him as well. I'm not sure how you make it work. Maybe him as an 8 and Dominic goes left wing. So Kudus, 9, Dominic as a front 3. lots of pace, lots of direct running, could be good. Paqueta and Alexis as an eight either side of a six, that could be good. But like, how often have we looked at West Ham and thought, well, there's two players we want? Like, we might have looked at Declan Rice for a few years and said, well, at 50 million, you'd definitely take him, box-to-box midfield, big engine on him, does a lot of the fetching and the carrying and the ball winning. But outside of him, there was never really anybody over the last few years. Like, Bowen was never one for me that I looked at and thought, well, he could step up to Liverpool. I think West Ham is he could maybe go to a United, given where they are right now. But I don't think he's the type of player that would go to us or to City or Arsenal, who have eyes on titles.
No, I would agree. I think the only time I would be looking at him is if you had, you know, back in the day, let's say when we had an absolute guarantee that Firmino, Mane and Salah were always starting. Sometimes I wanted a player who could play two of those three as our fourth, and we never really had it. I know Origi played left and centre at times, I'd say Bowen's a comfortable level above Origi, to be honest.
Around the time we bought Jota, I would have said
Just pre-Jota would have been the ideal kind of time.
Yeah. And I mean, ideally you would have had him and Jota, because then both of them can play two positions. Both can play the middle role, Bowen right side, Jota left. And now you have five for three positions and you're in good order. Actually, since you've brought up the old front three and we're talking about Mohamed Kudus, who it's fairly well known, it's certainly strongly rumoured, that the recruitment team wanted to sign him when Pep and Linders and Jurgen Klopp pushed for Cody Gakpo. We had a report today from Paul Joyce, good old Joycey, that Darwin Nunez, and this is something that, again, people knew, but it's just interesting that it's come out, that Darwin Nunez was very much a Jurgen Klopp signing, and that the club, the recruitment staff, wanted to sign Christopher Nkunku at the time. When I saw that, the first person I thought of was you, because you were a massive proponent of Nkunku very, very early on. Would you have seen him as a Bobby replacement? That's kind of where I went as soon as I thought of it.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.